The gospel lesson this morning from Matthew. And he put before them another parable. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to someone who sowed good seed in his field, but while everybody was asleep, an enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and then went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared as well. And the slaves of the householder came and said to him, "Master, did you not sow good seed in the field? Where then did these weeds come from?" He answered, "An enemy has done this." The slave said to him, "Then do you want us to go and gather them?" But he replied, "No. For in gathering the weeds, you would uproot the wheat along with them. Let both of them grow together until the harvest. And at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, 'Collect the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" Then he left the crowds and went into the house. And his disciples approached him, saying, "Explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field." And he answered, "The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed are the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the children of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are collected and burned up with fire, so will it be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all evildoers. And they will throw them into the furnace of fire, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father." Let anyone with ears listen. This is the gospel of grace. Thanks be to God. Well, it's National Vacation Month. And I've just come across a hymn I think is perfect for these almost dog days of summer when everybody else is out there living it up in the life they wish they could have away from all of us. It's a jaunty old Methodist camp hymn titled, "When I Take My Vacation in Heaven." I hope Reverend Jewett will bring it here to Broadway. Perhaps when I take my vacation in Vermont. Here's the lyrics. "Here so many are taking vacations, to the mountains, the lakes, and the sea, to rest from their cares and their worries. What a wonderful time that must be. But it seems not my lot to be like them. I must toil through the heat and the cold, seeking out the lost sheep on the mountain, bringing wanderers back to the fold. Now, someday, I shall take my vacation to the city John tells about, with its foundation walls all so precious, where from gladness of heart I shall shout. There the weather will always be pleasant. Not a cloud shall sweep o'er the sky, and no earthquakes or cyclones shall threaten in that land of the sweet by and by. And then finally, the fourth verse of most interest to us this morning. There will be no space given to smokers. No card parties there are allowed. The backbiters, liars, and gossipers cannot stand such a wonderful crowd. The weather does sound wonderful, and we all know we are wonderful too. But I have to say that this song makes a vacation in heaven sound just a little much too like a vacation with the in-laws. Some would rather just stay home. I know a church with no backbiters, liars, and gossipers sounds good. It sounds like heaven. But best of luck if you can find it. And if you do, I bet you this. One, it will be small. And two, there will surely be some other sinner there to poison the purity party. That would be a real shame. And it would also be a real church. It was the real church Matthew had in mind when he set out to write his gospel, including within it the story of his own calling and belonging in the kingdom of heaven. Pharisees murmured and seethed about Jesus coming over to a tax collector's house to have dinner with him. But Jesus' response was, I think, well, brilliant and profound. The healthy have no need of a doctor, but the sick. And the Son of Man has come to call not the righteous, but the sinners. Matthew knows that a tree is judged by its fruit. But he warns us about judging too soon. For just as a sequoia grows long and slow before finally becoming the giant of the trees, so too some followers of Jesus start off as sinners before the long and slow process of becoming saints. This is one obvious point of the parable I just read. The master tells his servants not to go out pulling up all of the weeds among the wheat, lest in their zeal to purge the field, they end up doing more harm than good. For identifying the weeds, frankly, isn't always as easy as it sounds. When I was in high school, for example, I was one of two co-proprietors and employees of J&R Lawn Service. I was the R, and my best friend Jeff Hancock was the J in our ill-fated enterprise. Almost all of our customers were either family or friends. And I remember one day my Aunt Sharon hired us to help her clean up the yard. Noticing how tall the weeds were out in the alley, we went to town on them behind her house, only come to find out they weren't weeds after all. They were her cherry tomato plants. Now, it's hard to get fired by one's own family member. But Aunt Sharon did suggest Jay and R consider other lines of work. Maybe demolition or divinity. Jeff is now a practicing dentist. I hope for his patient's sake he discerns cavities better than he did fruit plants. You judge a tree by its fruit, but you can't judge too soon. For some, you were so sure were weeds, will no doubt turn out to be wheat. And that is part of the message we have in our Hebrew Bible lesson this morning. Jacob was such a mess, grabbing the heel of his older brother at birth and stealing his blessing later in life. He didn't do as bad as Cain did to Abel, but no sound parent would let Jacob sit next to his brother Ishmael in the back seat of that vacation car ride. But then Jacob had that profound encounter with God at Bethel. And it so often happens when someone has an encounter with God, something inside of Jacob began to change. Jacob was becoming Israel, and the weed was becoming wheat. And as Emerson said, a weed is just a plant whose virtues have yet to be discovered. That may indeed oftentimes be true. But still, there are other times when we know a weed is a weed. And even then, the counsel in today's gospel text is not to go out into that field, uprooting everything. Because in doing so, we are bound to tear up a whole lot of wheat along with the weeds. Evil exists. It infiltrates our fields. It has infiltrated our world. But the cure can sometimes be worse than the disease. And in seeking to purge all of the weeds, what you can actually end up doing is terrorizing all of the wheat. I'm thinking this morning of Arthur Miller's American classic, The Crucible, which many of us read in high school. Okay, some of us read in high school. The Puritan clergyman, Reverend John Hale, realizes the error of his way when he set out to purify Salem, Massachusetts from the witchcraft he and the other Salem clergy had been led to believe was all around. Hysteria set into the town. Suspicion was everywhere. A witch was on every handle of a broom and a demon on every beam of a house. And before the fever broke, more than 200 people stood accused. 30 were convicted. 19 were hanged. And finally, Reverend Hale relented and repented. And in a powerful, powerful scene in Miller's play, Reverend Hale expresses his deep remorse for what he has done, saying these words, "There is blood on my head. Can you not see the blood on my head?" He can see it now. But sadly, for his victims and for himself, he sees it too late. Just in case you slept through high school lit, let me remind you that Arthur Miller wrote The Crucible as an allegory of McCarthyism. McCarthy was a Puritan too, someone who wanted to purify America of all un-American activities, root out all the Reds, catch all the communists. The Crucible was written in 1953, but beloved, the Red Scare is making its return today. In recent weeks, I've been hearing the word communism over and over and over again. And Mother Jones magazine just reported that President Trump has brought it up at least 80 times in just the last 2 weeks. The clear intent is to try to get Americans to see red all around and around and around and be scared. Red baiting has returned. And with it comes also Islam baiting as well. Clearly, there's a concerted effort to make Americans afraid that Muslims are taking over our country. Even though Muslims make up only 1% of our population, less than 1% of our Congress, and 0% of our Senate. And another group that constitutes only 1% is trans people. Do you know another? Another 1%? Jews in Germany in 1933. Still, we must say Muslims do constitute 25% of the world. Christians constitute another 25%, and so with half of the population between us, half of the population between us, is it not the case that if we go about trying to root each other out, this whole earthly garden is going to get ruined? And a lot of good wheat, Muslim and Christian and Hindu and other, is going to be destroyed. I know some will say we are in a struggle of good versus evil, and maybe sometimes we are. But let us never forget that good is often inextricably bound up with evil. And let us always, always remember that in the beginning, It was the temptation to the knowledge of good and evil that was the occasion for the destruction of the whole good garden in the first place. Reverend John Hale was not only a character in Arthur Miller's Crucible, he was also a real live person. A Puritan clergyman who at first participated in and then later repented of the hysteria of the witch hunts. 2 years after his death, his posthumous apology for the events that took place in Salem were printed. In it, he said these words: "I have had a deep sense of the consequence of mistakes in matters capital, and their impossibility of recovering when completed. And what grief of heart it brings to a tender conscience to have been unwittingly encouraging of the sufferings of the innocent." Reverend Hale died burdened with a heavy conscience for the mistakes he made in judgments of his neighbors. And the letter he left to this earth was his plea for reservation and discretion in the face of persecution and prosecution. And it was the seed of what we now know as the concept of the presumption of innocence in the face of the charge of guilt, guaranteed by this nation. Jesus said, "Do not judge by appearances, but judge with right judgment." Beloved, if we cannot do that, let us not judge at all. For the measure we give will be the measure we get, and the witch trials of our past become the crucible of our present. God save us from such hysteria. God save us from ourselves. In the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, one true God, Mother of us all, and together all of God's people say, Amen.